We're hearing from centenarians on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Do you plan to live to be 100? Your odds today are improving. More and more people around the world are becoming centenarians. We're going to hear a collection of their personal journeys and life lessons. What lessons have you learned from the older family members or friends in your life? Do you personally know someone who's lived to 100? What is your relationship like with them, and what have they taught you? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Nina Ellis is general manager of WYSO. That's a public radio station in Yellow Springs, Ohio. And she's a former staff producer for NPR's All Things Considered and the author of the book, If I Live to Be 100, Lessons from the Centenarians. Nina, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Really happy to be here.
What do you believe makes this age group, 100 and up, so special?
Well, my experience was that the people were so open and so open-hearted and willing to talk and willing to listen that for me it became a journey of just releasing my own expectations and going to the place that they wanted to go. So it was a kind of freedom in a way that they had to just be in the moment and explore with a stranger their lives. So I found that very, very exciting. And once I was able to calm down and stop thinking about, you know, the little minutia of my daily life and just be with them, they had all the time in the world for me, and I found that to be a real gift.
You could be in the moment with them and really understand that this is something that could perhaps be achievable because you want to live to be a 100.
I've always wanted to live to be 100. I don't know how I got that idea, except even as a little kid, I had that notion. My grandmother lived to be 99 and 9 months, and she was very hearty, right? Pretty much right to the end. So I had that example of active, healthy longevity in my grandmother. And I think I was always around older people that were just attractive to me. I never got an idea that it was not fun to be old in some kind of way.
And research shows that living to 100 is becoming more common today. What factors do you think play into us living longer?
Well, no question that there's a genetic factor, and there's a lot of research that's going into showing that. It's quite complicated, and I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to try and explain it. But it's very common to find 100-year-old people who have 100-year-old siblings and relatives who live to be that long, that old. But also, I think that certainly our healthcare is improved in the last 100 years immensely. People were dying of things that we can't imagine them dying from now. But also, I just think that we're more aware of our taking care of ourselves and the fact that we have some say in our own longevity now.
Did you find any commonalities among the people that you interviewed, some thoughts or ideas, some approaches to life that perhaps contributed to their longevity that was a through line among the people you interviewed?
Yeah, it's really, you know, it's a chicken and egg question for sure. But what I did find was people who had some deep passion in their lives that could be some family member, it could be a hobby, it could be their faith in God. They were all very resilient. They bounced back from adversity or loss pretty quickly. They had a general, and this is not every single person, but in general, there was an optimism that was obvious. I also found, especially in the women, a directness. So they weren't, you know, like holding in a lot of anxiety. They were putting it out there. And also a sociability that was very, very important, especially, and it becomes obvious as people get, you know, closer to 100 and they maybe lose their mobility. Sociability becomes harder and harder for many of them to maintain. But if they're fun to be around, and a lot of them were that way, they were telling jokes all the time, and they remembered other people's birthdays, and they could be like the life of the party, people wanted to be with them. So it's a survival mechanism, that sociability. And a lot of them also, as I mentioned, great sense of humor, great, awesome sense of humor. So I'm just saying that I'm not a scientist. I didn't do a scientific study. But these are the traits that were pretty common in all the people I met. And I interviewed almost 30 centenarians all over the country.
Talking with Nina Ellis, she is the author of the book, If I Live to Be 100, Lessons from the Centenarians. Do you personally know someone who's lived to 100? What perspective have they given you on your own life? What's your relationship like with them? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Nina, let's get into some of these stories. And I want to ask you to describe the first interview you did and what you learned from it, what you learned about yourself by meeting your first centenarian.
Yeah, I was very impatient to start with. I prepared a list of questions that I took around with me to the first several interviews, and that list of questions was several pages long, and it was mostly things that had to do with historical events of the 20th century. When I started, Kate, I thought I was doing a history project, right? Mm. I thought I was going to go around the country. It was right before the turn of the 20th century to the 21st century, and I was going to do like the people's century and get memories of major historical events. And after a while, I realized that just wasn't going to work because people didn't care that much about those things that I thought were, you know, major historical events, or they didn't remember them that well. And it sort of gradually morphed into this project about what it's like to be 100. But I started out in a rush, impatient, not giving enough time to the interviews. The first lady I met lived in a group kind of facility in Washington, D.C., and she was pretty lonely and pretty, her memories were very confused. And the day I met her, she was having a really bad day and she was kind of grouchy with me. So I didn't really think through what it might take to make that interview really good for her, which would have been more time and going back several times. I learned that it was better to go back to do shorter time periods multiple times rather than think I was going to go there for 2 or 3 hours and get a life story. So I made a lot of mistakes when I started out. But gradually, as I met more and more people, and I started to find people who had no memory problems and who were still living pretty active lives, and that really opened my eyes to a demographic group that I knew nothing about, which is to say, pretty healthy centenarians. They are out there. They're not all that way, but I was able to find them without too much trouble after a little while. So I think the main thing was I learned to be patient and to put aside my questions and just kind of go wherever they wanted to go in the conversation. That made it much more rewarding for both of us, I think.
Nina Ellis is our guide, and we're talking about living to 100. Her book is called If I Live to Be 100, Lessons from the Centenarians. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you know someone who is 100 or in the ballpark? What is their secret to living a long life? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings, back in a minute on the Ideas Network. The book is called If I Live to Be 100. We're talking about it on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Around the year 2000, author Nina Ellis crisscrossed the country interviewing people who had made it to 100 as part of a project at NPR where she was a producer. And she writes about getting the stare from all the centenarians, getting into these interviews where perhaps they can't see or hear well, so they take some time to size her up and she's learned just to stay calm and allow herself to be examined, and she's sizing them up too. We're learning from these beautiful interactions and hearing your thoughts along the way at 800-642-1234. What lessons have you learned from your eldest family members? And if you're out there and you are 100 years old or in the vicinity, by all means, call in. We'd love to talk to you at 800-642-1234. Nina Ellis stays with us. She is a general manager at a public radio station in Yellow Springs, Ohio, and her book is called If I Live to Be 100. And Nina, you interviewed a wide variety of people who are 100 or who said they were 100. How did you go about finding these people and then choosing?
Yeah, finding them was actually easier than I thought it would be, because this project began in the late, like in 98, 99, and because we were coming to the turn of the century, there were lots of local newspapers that were doing articles about people who were 100 years old. And the headline was often "Lived in Two Centuries." You know, so these were people who were born in the late 1800s. I love to say that. And then they were, you know, they were going to make it to the 21st century. So it was a matter of the using the internet in a lot of cases to just, you know, Google words like centenarian or lived in two centuries. But then it became a question of trying to find people who had a variety of experiences and a demographic range. So it was very interestingly common to find women who had been either teachers or nurses, because there weren't a lot of professions open to women in the early part of the 20th century. So it was, you know, I tried to find people who brought different kinds of stories to the table.
One of the people we meet is Ruth Ellis, who you spent more time with than other centenarians. She was the oldest living lesbian. Can you tell us a little bit about her life?
As far as we know, she was. She lived in Detroit, and she had a really fascinating story. I found Ruth, there was an article about her in People magazine, and there was a lovely film that had been made about her life. And I went to see her, and the beautiful thing about Ruth's existence at that time was the community of women that had gathered around her. She was always out. She claimed that even in the 1930s and 40s that she was out, and she, in her later years, met a group of lesbians in Detroit who adopted her more or less as their grandmother. She was never alone if she didn't want to be. She was taken to parties. She was taken grocery shopping. People took her to church. If she wanted to do something, there was somebody there to help her. And just by association with those women, Ruth's later years were she was had an exuberance about her that was pretty beautiful.
And she was surrounded by people, and that's the fear in getting old, that you lose your friends as they die.
And Ruth was an example, too, of having younger friends, right? It's just too easy to live someplace where everybody around you is 80, 90 years old and not extend yourself and socialize with younger people. But Ruth had this community that was surrounding her, and it was really, really awesome to see that and to be with her.
What did you learn about yourself from Ruth?
Oh, boy. I learned so much from everybody. I guess from Ruth, I learned a lot about just not making assumptions about people and letting them really tell their story. Ruth, you know, I had some, I think, very naive notions about what it would be like to be black and a lesbian in this country in the 1930s. And she was shut out of a lot of opportunities because of those things. And it took me a while to really put myself in her shoes and to grasp what she had been through. So she was very patient with me and kind of walked me through some of the tough situations that she'd been through. And I had to learn to just kind of be patient, as I said before, and let those stories unfold and not barge in with my opinion or my assumption about what she had felt or what she had been through.
We're talking with Nina Ellis. She is author of the book, If I Live to Be 100, Lessons from the Centenarians. What lessons have you learned from the older family members or friends in your life? Would you want to live to 100? Why or why not? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Dan now, joining us from Drummond. Hi, Dan.
Hello. One of my greatest hobbies, and it was even going back to when I was very young. I loved going to nursing homes, and I loved sitting and listening to the stories that different ones told about their life. Where I live now, we used to have a lady, and I would not be one bit surprised if she doesn't live to be 100. On her next birthday, she'll be 97 years old, and she was telling me one time when she was a girl that it snowed so hard on the 4th of July they couldn't see across their lake.
Mm-hmm. Dan, thank you for the call and for collecting those stories at nursing homes. Nina, nursing homes are a really great place to be and to find those stories.
Exactly. You know, the funny thing, Kate, is that there are so many centenarians in this country. When I started my research, they were the fastest growing demographic group, something like 70 or 80,000 people in this country, 100 years old, and they're kind of not always visible, right? So I guarantee you that if you call a nursing home in your community, there are going to be people there who are 100 or close to 100. So, if you can have a way to go and socialize with people, most of them really welcome the chance to meet people and to tell their stories. You know, what most people want to share their life stories with another person. It gives all of us, no matter what age we are, great joy and fulfillment to be able to tell our story. So some people who live in nursing homes, maybe their families are not close by, or they are losing their friends. They have outlived, some of these centenarians outlived their own children. So they're, I can't say how wonderful it was, how grateful so many of them were to have someone say, tell me about your life. I've got all the time in the world. So yay for Dan. I'm really happy to hear that he's spending some time. And obviously, it's done so much for Dan, too. That's the thing.
Well, yeah. Let's meet Anna Wilmot, the rower in your book. Tell us a little bit about her story.
Well, I can't not smile when I talk about Anna. I visited with her many, many times in her later years. She lived on a little lake in Westfield, Massachusetts, which wasn't far from where she grew up. She'd been coming to that lake all her life. She lived in a little wooden cabin alone. She was still driving when I met her. And she would go out every day in her rowboat and row by herself across the lake for exercise. Mm. She had a lot of moxie. She was very vibrant. She had dyed her hair bright red, and she spoke very loudly, and she remembered everybody's name. She was grateful. She was optimistic. She was funny. I just couldn't be with her enough. I mean, I just ate her up. I think because of her sunny outlook, but also I could see, you know, wow, she has a pretty great life, and it's not, and she's living by herself. She's doing pretty much what she wants to do. She didn't want to leave that house. It wasn't until she was almost 105 that she left there and went to live with her son. So Anna Wilmot also, people, if they remember my series on NPR, remember that Anna was known as the skinny dipper. She would go skinny dipping in her lake. But she said, only if it's cloudy and there's no fishermen around.
She had some parameters. We're spending the hour on people who've lived to be 100 and what they can teach us through their journey and living in frontier life, through the Great War, through the Great Depression. Nina Ellis is our guide. Her book is If I Live to Be 100, Lessons from the Centenarians. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you know someone who's lived to 100? And if so, have you really talked to that person? And what did you discover about their life and their love? What did you discover about yourself? Call in at 800-642-1234. News is next, and then we'll continue here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about centenarians here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So I want to give a shout out to a very dear friend who is approaching this club. Charlton Havard Lyons was born at 5:30 a.m. on December 5th, 1921 at his family home in New Orleans. His mother was born in 1895 here in Eagle Point, Wisconsin, not far from Chippewa Falls. Charlton graduated from Yale, enlisted in the Army. He talks about the close calls in World War II, the dear friends he lost in combat. And after the war, he went to law school at Tulane, from there becoming an oil attorney, traveling the world. Emailing works best for Charlton these days because his hearing is difficult, and we miss our regular visits poolside, Charlton waltzing into our public radio station in Louisiana to give me an interesting article to read. And I want to be there for his big birthday because it will absolutely be a blast. Do you know someone who's lived to 100? And if so, have you really talked to that person or interviewed them? We're at 800-642-1234. Author Nina Ellis stays with us. Her book is called If I Live to Be 100, Lessons from the Centenarians. Let's go to the phones now with Eugene joining us from Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning, Kate. My mother was born in the early part of the 20th century, and she told me stories about growing up in Chicago, working in the speakeasies down there with all the gangsters. And that was just plain interesting all the way around.
What were some of those stories like?
I didn't tell you a person when I came on the air. The first year I taught, I had a conversation with a lady that invented the Battle of the Little Bighorn, pretty much. She was in her 90s, and that was the early 1960s. And I had to do it through a translator.
Eugene.
Time and space. But I just turned 80, and my health is just very good. And I figure I'm making it to 100.
Well, keep on trucking. Nina, you get these really interesting glimpses of history, you know, speakeasies in Chicago, various battle scenes.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I loved most about getting to meet and spend time with these folks was I thought of it as a kind of time travel, because after a while and you're just in that spot with them and you're not in a hurry and you just let them go and let their minds wander, I heard amazing stories. I heard a woman told me that she was raised by her grandmother, and her grandmother had jokes about George Washington.
Wow.
That kind of took my breath away. That kind of memory, and when you're with people for a long time, you start to really have this exchange of emotions with them. There's a scientific name for it called limbic resonance. You feel what people are feeling after a while. That just because you're close in proximity and you're looking in each other's eyes, and you're just kind of feel this intense connection with people. So when they remember things about their childhood, about, like Dan said earlier, a woman talked about it was snowing on the 4th of July. People remember things from when they were little kids, that they're very vivid memories to them, and then you get to go there with them. That was a powerful, powerful experience for me, and you know, I would say to people, if you have the time, and it takes time, it can't just be, you know, with the TV on in the background, and if you're looking at your watch trying to get to a meeting, you have to stop, and you have to turn everything off, and you have to just be in the space with that person. And boy, that time travel is such a powerful thing.
Let's go to Terry now, joining us from Mercer. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning. I was just going to share a quick story about a lady. She must be 102 or 103. I met her. She lives up in the Keweenaw in the Upper Peninsula. She's still in her own home, lives there with her bachelor son. So it's your typical Uper idea, you know, this Finnish lady and her bachelor son. But I've been lucky. I met her through an artist friend. I go up there two or three times a year to paint, and we always stop in and see Melvi. And a couple of years ago, she gave me this great blue and black checked vintage coat, and I think of her every time I wear it. But she, I believe her husband worked on the Lakers, so she had stories of, you know, being a single mother, basically, because her husband was gone on the lakes, on the ships. And she's just got such a spark in her eye. She has a massage therapist come once a week, and she's just takes care of people.
You're breaking up a little bit there, Terry. Thank you so much for the call. Let's go to Jody now in Fish Creek. Jody, hi.
Good morning. My grandmother was born in 1880 and lived to 1984. Which at the time was quite unusual for a centenarian. I realized that I think about her life that she lived alone, but we were not concerned about her safety as far as someone coming to the door or calling, which certainly wouldn't be true today. One of the things that stands out in my experience with my grandmother, when I spent a great deal of time with her, was that she was always most concerned about the people around her and what was going on right at that moment. What was the Cubs score? Did they win today? What's going on in your life? Even though she had many wonderful stories to tell, she seldom spoke about them or about her physical problems. She was always much more interested in the people around her and what was going on.
Jody, thank you for those observations. Nina, very focused on the people around her and the present and not focused on today.
Oh, yeah. That was a big surprise to me, too, because, like I said, I wanted to hear stories about the past. And one thing that I really learned quickly was that a lot of these centenarians, especially the ones who were active and healthy, they were focused on now. And they would tell me stories about the past, but they weren't like, they didn't live in the past. They were living in today, and they were looking forward to the future. And that was something of a surprise to me and something that made it so enjoyable. Like Jody said, at her grandmother, she was there. She was totally present today, now. What do you need? What can I do for you? That's a very common personality trait that I discovered as well.
Talking with Nina Ellis, author of If I Live to Be 100, Lessons from the Centenarians, as Nina, a former producer at NPR, talked to dozens upon dozens of centenarians and learning about their lives. You can join in with your story about the person who is 100 in your life at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Nina, take us to Louisiana Hines. Tell us a bit about her life and what she saw growing up in Alabama.
Oh, Louisiana. She called herself Lou. She was living on her own in Detroit when I met her. She had come to Detroit after, I think, during World War II and worked in a defense factory there. She grew up in Alabama. She was that kind of person in the family that kept the family stories. You know, there's kind of like often there's one kid in the family who's interested in the past, right? And is always asking, what was it like when you were older? Well, she was that person in her family, and her grandparents were born into slavery. So she kept those stories. of what it was like growing up in rural Alabama, what it was like to court somebody, what their daily life was like, how they cooked, how they slaughtered animals, how they made everything that they used, they made. She had very disturbing memories as well of
lynchings.
Lynching, yeah, in southern Alabama. So I also learned that those stories, as I mentioned before, have to come out slowly, and you can't just jump in there and ask the most difficult and scary stories right away. You know, Louisiana wasn't really quite sure about me. Why was I coming there and asking her these things? And maybe she wasn't quite going to be confident that I would believe the stories that she had to tell. So she was a little reticent to kind of tell me a lot of things. I later met with one of her nephews, and he explained that to me. You know, like, got to think about it from her point of view. Here you are, a white woman coming. She doesn't know who you are, what you're trying to do, what your purpose is, what you're going to do with her story. So she's not going to automatically come out with all these really difficult and scary things that happened to her when she was a kid. So that was a big lesson for me as well.
Let's go to Alec joining us from Illinois. Hi, Alec.
Hi. How are you?
Good. You knew someone who was 111.
Yeah, correct. That's correct.
And what did they tell you? What was your relationship like?
Well, I met Gladys through a friend at church, and she was talking about her friend who was 111 and 110 at the time, and I asked her, like, can I meet her? And she said, sure. And so that day we drove down to her, where she lived at, the assisted living home, and so she had to get up, wake her up, and when we met, I asked her, like, what do you remember? And she's like, I remember when the Titanic sank, and that when the Great Depression happened, and how I had to shovel the driveway every morning and get on the train to get to my job in Chicago as an accountant. Sadly, she died in March, about 3 weeks ago, at 111, with her birthday being in February. So,
Alec, amazing story, and to be able to experience that moment to talk with her is truly amazing. We're looking at the lives of centenarians. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Nina Ellis, our guide to these timeless lessons. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the invaluable lessons that older generations can teach us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. About 20 years ago, Nina Ellis traveled around the country interviewing centenarians like Roy Larkin Stamper, the first. R.L., father, had 21 kids. R.L. walked 3 miles to school in Kentucky, lunch on cornbread. He got to the first grade and quit. He was a preacher for 70 years. Do you have a story about a centenarian in your life? We're at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about these life journeys through frontier life? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. The book is called If I Live to Be 100, Lessons from the Centenarians, and Nina Ellis stays with us for the hour. Let's go back to the phones now with Carla joining us from Jefferson. Hi, Carla.
Hi, Kate. So it was really exciting. I was working at a nursing home, and I was moving out to Wyoming. And one of my residents, when I told her I was moving, she told me how she went through Yellowstone National Park with her friends when they were 18, and how it was a dirt road they went through on a horse and carriage, and how the bears came right up to the carriage.
Oh, my gosh.
And then when I finally told her, you know, there's a road through there now and you can drive, she was just so upset that they would ruin that landscape with a road.
and a road with enclosed vehicles where you are not entirely exposed to the bears.
And you can camp there.
I love that. That is so fabulous. And you work in assisted living.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so you're probably more exposed to these stories, to these people, than other people who aren't working with this age group.
Correct. Oh, and I just love asking questions about it.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Carla. Nina, it sounds like, too, that some of your centenarians can be a little bit disappointed as technology evolves, as roads go through beautiful places.
Well, you know, a lot of them grew up in a very rural part of our country when there were more people living in rural areas. And so they never learned to rely on technology for fulfillment. So many, many of them had not used a computer before. But there were exceptions to that as well. There was a woman named Margaret Rawson who was still doing brain research on and using the computer quite nicely. Thank you very much. But yeah, technology, you know, was a little bit, at least digital technology, was pretty much something that most of them never felt the need to engage with.
Let's go to the ranch and talk a little bit about R.L. Stamper, who was a preacher. And the two of you spent quite a bit of time reminiscing about the past. What was that like?
Wow, he was a very intense person. I think his background as a preacher had taught him the power of language, and he described to me, you know, what the end of the world was going to be like, and how actually what it would look like, and what heaven was going to look like, and Some of the stories that he told me just, like, made the hair on the back of my neck stand up because he was so convinced and so intense in his descriptions. He lived on a ranch in Oklahoma, eastern Oklahoma, when I met him. As you described, he was originally from Kentucky. He got to Oklahoma on a freight train. He rode out there in a boxcar, jumped out of the train into a ditch, and found his way in Oklahoma, eventually had a horse ranch. One of the most amazing things about my experience with Mr. Stamper was that after I got home, I learned that someone who heard the interview that I put on Morning Edition called him up and said, I think I've just heard the man that I'm going to marry. And they got married.
Oh,
I got
goodness.
A phone call one morning. I'm sitting at home in Tacoma Park, Maryland, and somebody was Mr. Stamper's grandson said, if you can get here today, Roy Stamper's getting married. And I got on an airplane, and I got there a little too late, but sure enough, he had married a woman from Shreveport. You're part of the country, Kate.
Yeah.
And she had heard him tell his stories to me on Morning Edition, and they got married. And they didn't have a lot of time together. I think that Mr. Stamper only lived another 9 months after that, but they were really, really happy. And, you know, just the thought for him and for her that this was a possibility. You know, he's 100 years old, so what? I'm going to get married. It was a pretty amazing story. He was a really incredible guy.
Some of these conversations you had, you talked about what happens when the spouse dies, because some of these people lived for decades beyond their spouse. How was that?
It was hard for especially the men. I don't want to be too general, but, you know, a lot of times in the family, the wife would be the one who was the social glue. And she would always make things happen, right? She would call up the grandkids or invite people to dinner or say, you know, let's go out and do this. And a lot of times when the wife would pass away, the husband would be really, really not just lonely for their wife's company, but lonely for the company and the sociability that that spouse had made happen in their lives. So I mentioned that before, how important it is for seniors not to be isolated. That is a very depressing and wearing situation for them. Their health declines, their mental outlook declines when they're not social. So couples who live a long, long life often don't survive very long without each other. There was a husband and wife who I love so much named Sadie and Gilbert Hill. They were married more than 80 years.
Oh, my goodness.
80. You know, we hear about people who, like, were married 70 years and were blown away by that, but they were married 80. They met each other when they were 17 years old in Vermont, and they had been together their whole lives. They, like, finished each other's sentences. They were just incredibly bonded together. And I met them. Sadie was struggling a little bit. She had cancer and passed within a year or so after I met them. Everybody thought that Gilbert wouldn't last without her, but he did. He did. He had a community around him again, which is so important, and he spent his time doing things for other people. He had a neighbor who was blind, and he would go out every day and help that neighbor. Here's Gilbert. He's more than 100, right?
Mm.
Going out and helping that neighbor who was blind and needed some help.
Nina, it's been more than 10 years now since you've completed this project, and you wrote, for every sharp, funny, charismatic centenarian, you've met 3 to 4 who are ailing and depressed and alone, and you don't know how to change that. Do you still ponder that? Does that wear on you?
It does wear on me, and I'll tell you, I wrote this book when I was just turning coming up on my 50th birthday, okay? I was in my late, mid-40s when I started, and it's 20 years later now, so I'm in a very different place in my life, and both of my parents have passed away since I did this project, and it makes me see the difficulties of being older in a much clearer way. I was able to really settle in and enjoy the people who are having active and healthy later years. But, you know, I think now I understand the rarity of that even more. And it makes me want to say to people, if you know somebody who's 98, 99, 100, go and visit them. Don't wait. Do an interview with them. Find a way to record that interview if you can, because, you know, there's so much to learn.
Nina, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. My pleasure, Kate.
Nina Ellis is general manager of WYSO, a public radio station in Ohio, former staff producer for NPR, and her book is If I Live to Be 100, Lessons from the Centenarians. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.